Chapter 12. "Easy, ma'am. It's not a race," Dave cautioned as Perkins got her safety line snagged on a piece of debris protruding from a gaping hole in the ship's hull. "I'm fine, Chaika. You're not my babysitter." "No, ma'am. I do have more spacewalk time than you. Let me go first." "Why?" Perkins was predisposed to be irritated because of the dangerous situation, the lack of time, and the circuitous route they had to take toward the ship's engineering section, and because Sergeant Chaika acted like he needed to hold her hand the whole way.
"Because you are younger and a man?"
"No, Colonel. Because if one of us is expendable, it's not you. There's a whole lot of stuff attached to the hull that could kill us." He pointed to sparks arcing from another hole in the hull. "Between here and that airlock. I should scout ahead." The sergeant's reply had chastened her. She had let impatience, anger, and fear overcome her need for cool judgment. "Chaika, none of us are expendable. Not humans. Not out here. We don't know if anyone is left alive on Earth. UNEF on Paradise may be all that is left." "Thank you. Go ahead and check for anything that might blow up in our faces, but be careful." "Careful. You got that?" I don't want to lose you," she added with a lump in her throat. "Yes, Colonel." Dave's feeble grin could be seen in the faint lights illuminating his helmet faceplate. The ship had successfully jumped away from the battle space, or successfully enough, and the Bosphorok ship had not pursued. After a terrifying 15 minutes trapped in their designated section of the ship, not having any idea what was going on, as the comm system was offline, comms were partially restored, and Perkins had been able to use her command codes to get a rough and confusing status report. What she saw shocked her. The entire forward section of the ship was missing, simply gone, and the hull was breached in multiple areas. Main power was off, even emergency backup systems were spotty and intermittent. Attempts to contact anyone in authority were a failure until Perkins located a feature that tracked the ship's officers. 1. There was only one adult crewman whose comm system indicated activity, and that person was several sections aft in the primary engineering control center. That was why Perkins and Chaika were in spacesuits clambering along the outside of the ship. Much of the ship's interior was a dangerously impassable shambles, with airtight doors closed and not responding to the codes Perkins had been given. She had quickly decided her best option was to travel aft on the ship's hull and enter the engineering center through an airlock, despite the danger. The ship shuddered occasionally, as one system or another overloaded and exploded, or pipes ruptured, or a thruster unhelpfully fired all by itself. To move at all required clipping a safety line, crawling along the hull using whatever handholds were available, and then clipping another safety line. They could not rely on the expedient tactic of floating between handholds, for the ship might suddenly jerk away beneath them and they would drift out to the end of the safety line, wasting precious time and exposing themselves to the jagged bits of debris surrounding the ship like a predatory cloud. It was a damned good thing, Perkins told herself, that the Toaster was a training ship, for the hull had regularly spaced handholds and attachment points for safety lines that would never be allowed on the exterior of a true warship.
"Got it," Dave announced as he hooked his boots into a clamp at the bottom of the airlock. "Thank God it's active, ma'am. I'm starting the cycle now. Would it be best to wait for me to get there?"
"No." Dave shook his head, though the gesture was barely visible in the blackness of interstellar space. "Having the door open will give you more to grab onto." "It's opening," he noted with great relief, swallowing his fear that the airlock might refuse to respond to a human. That airlock was intended for a single maintenance person, not groups of trainees, and it was a very tight fit for two people wearing spacesuits.
Colonel, maybe I should wait outside while you cycle through."
"Screw that, Chaika. Get in here right now. I'm not risking this thing crapping out on us while you're out there."
"That's an order," she added when he hesitated.
It was a tight fit, even a tight squeeze. They managed to stuff themselves into the airlock enough so no limbs stuck out to block the door sensors, and the outer door slid slowly closed. "Chaika," Perkins grunted as his helmet pushed her head to the side at an awkward angle, and one of his knees was jammed into her crotch hard enough to make her left hip hurt.
"Unless you're gonna buy me dinner first."
"Oh, sorry."
He tried moving his leg, but there wasn't much he could do about it. His right hand was free, so he used it to activate the emergency pressurization cycle, using a bottle of stored air to rapidly flood the lock with air. In moments, the inner door's locking pins retracted. "Door's opening," he gasped as one of her elbows dug into his chest hard enough to leave a bruise. "The engineering compartment holds air," he reported, as the pressure gauge read 92% of normal. Perkins got herself untangled from the sergeant and through the inner door first. Her hopes faded as her gaze took in the main compartment's condition. Most displays were dark, with others flickering or displaying static or scrolling lines of gibberish. Without gravity, objects, both broken or merely loose, floated everywhere. A tool bounced off her helmet before she could see it coming. "Come on," she waved to Chaika without turning to look at him. Keeping a firm grip on handholds, she pulled herself across the compartment to where an injured Ruhar officer was loosely strapped to a table, surrounded by four cadets. As she approached, she reached up with a thumb to crack open her faceplate and swing it up, using her lips to pull the helmet microphone closer to her mouth. "Hello. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Perkins of the Human X-Force," she spoke slowly, carefully enunciating each word so the translator would not make unfortunate mistakes. A female cadet who had been literally hovering over the injured officer looked up, and Perkins recognized her as Jin Garner, a girl Nert liked very much.
"Colonel Perkins."
Jin turned toward the newcomers with an expression that was a mixture of fear and relief. The human colonel being a senior officer might take some of the responsibility off Jin's shoulders, but since Perkins was an alien, she was not likely to be of much use in the crisis.
"Urmat Datha is badly injured."
She put a hand over her mouth to contain her fear as the Urmat shuddered and blood bubbled from his lips. "We need to move him to the medical station." Perkins did not like the paleness of the officer's lips, nor the tiny bubbles of blood exhaled from his nose with every labored breath.
"We tried. We can't," Jin explained. "The passageways are all blocked. How did you get here?"
She looked toward the big door at the far end of the compartment, which still had its locking bars engaged to hold it shut.
"We spacewalked along the hull outside."
"You did?"
Jin's eyebrows lifted, and again Perkins was struck by how some expressions were universal between species. Between bipedal species that walked upright, she reminded herself, and only those few species she had met.
"That is too dangerous. No more dangerous than being in here."
Perkins ducked and pushed away a broken piece of metal and composite that had floated in front of her face.
"Urmat Datha is the only survivor of the entire crew?"
She knew the Rue Tostella had departed Paradise with a limited number of adult crew, as senior cadets were expected to gain real shipboard experience by standing watches, performing routine maintenance, and other roles that would be filled by fully trained adult crew members. Losing the forward part of the ship had taken away the bridge and command crew with it. But how could the Urmat be the only survivor?
"We think so, yes."
Jin nodded a bit too vigorously, her fear evident.
"There were seven of us on duty here, with Urmat Datha in charge. Klasta Amatu and Cadet Sertil were killed."
She looked at the blackened mark on the hull.
"It's just us now. None of us are trained as medics. Are you?"
She looked to Dave, hopefully.
"Not in Ruhar physiology," Perkins frowned. "He needs the resources of a full medical station. His suit."
With one gentle hand, she wiped away some of the still wet blood on Datha's right side and did not like what she found. A rip. A tear wide enough that the suit's nano-repair mechanism was not able to close the fatal opening.
"Can we patch this?" "We used the patch kit for Cadet Sertil. That was Datha's order, but it did not save him."
Jin looked sadly to where the unlucky Sertil's body was strapped into a chair. Perkins could see at least three patches attached to that suit. She thought the patches had done their job, but Sertil had died anyway. Datha had probably thought he was being noble by telling the cadets to use the patches on a crew member more badly injured than himself, but Perkins knew that was the kind of amateur wishful thinking civilians indulged in. As the lone surviving adult officer, Datha should have known his duty was to have his own wounds tended to, so he could assist others. Now, everyone aboard the ship might all die,
and there was nothing noble about that.
The nanomachines. Jin glanced up to see if Perkins understood the translation. They worked to repair the suit, then after we blocked the air leak, they pulled inside to stop Dotha's blood loss.
Your nanotech can work on mechanical and biological systems? Perkins asked in surprise.
No.
Jin reached up to wipe away the tears brimming in her eyes.
The suit can inject medical nanobots into a user, and they did, but they needed help.
The mechanical nano, the translator stumbled over the term.
As you said, it can only act to block blood vessels. It plugs leaks.
She looked up at Perkins, seeking understanding.
You did what you could. The Urmot needs skilled medical treatment. Is there another suit available?
No, there are no spares available now. The locker with spare suits was damaged. That is where Sertol was when he was hit.
Jin closed her eyes tightly, causing droplets of tear to float away from her face.
He can use my suit, she offered.
Perkins looked from Dotha to the anxious cadet, judging their sizes.
I don't think he will fit.
He can use my suit, ma'am.
Dave began to pull off his helmet.
Forget it, Chaika. You know what it's like out there. You need to guide us back.
You.
She pointed to another cadet. You look about Dotha's size. Get out of...
You.
Dotha's eyes opened, and he reached up to grasp her forearm, missed, and his arm bounced off the table. Gently, Perkins caught his hand and wrapped her glove around his. The Ruhar officer tried to squeeze his hand, but his strength was gone.
Ship.
Badly damaged. The forward hull is missing.
Perkins did not sugarcoat the information.
We're on backup power, and that is failing. We have no shields, no propulsion, sensors are scrambled, and that Bosphorok battlecruiser could jump in on top of us at any second. Ormat Dotha, you need to know right now that we believe you are the only adult crewman to survive, Perkins told the truth without sugarcoating anything.
Dotha was an adult, a crewman, an officer, with the rank of Ormat being equivalent to a major in the U.S. Army. The unvarnished truth is the least they owed to him.
Everyone else. Dead.
His words came out in a wet whisper, bubbles of blood choking him as he spoke.
Yes.
Perkins squeezed the man's hand. The dead crewmen were his shipmates, friends, people he might have served with for years. All gone now.
There are senior cadets who could assume...
No,
Dotha declared with vehemence beyond his strength, and it threw him into a coughing fit. Bubbles of blood spewing from his mouth onto the front of Perkins's suit. She did not flinch, merely held the Urmot's hand while he recovered.
You,
he pointed to Perkins with an index finger,
are an officer, senior officer. Your rank is equivalent to our Ormath.
He paused to take a breath. Perkins knew that was not quite true, as the rank structure of the Ruhar military was more complicated than the commissioned ranks of the U.S. Army. But the point was not relevant to the situation.
You must take command.
Me.
Perkins pointed to herself as all four Ruhar cadets sucked in sharp breaths.
Ormat Dotha, I am not Ruhar. I am an alien. Surely a
senior cadet, he coughed, is not an officer. Trainee, you,
he scrunched up his eyes as a wave of pain struck him,
have experience, combat experience, you take command.
Perkins looked at Chaika, both of them stunned. With his other hand, Dotha pawed for the Z-phone on his belt. Jin pulled it out and put it into his free hand as Perkins released the hand she had been holding. With both of his hands so shaky and weak, he needed Jin to steady the phone. He pressed buttons, and a command application popped up on the screen. Dotha spoke quietly into the phone.
Ormat Farpu Dotha, transferring command of the warship Ruh to Stella, to Lieutenant Colonel.
He looked up to see if his pronunciation was correct.
Emily Perkins, of the Human Expeditionary Force.
Transfer of command acknowledged,
a mechanical voice issued from his phone at the same time Perkins's own phone beeped and vibrated. She looked at her phone, seeing a cascade of command authorizations scrolling past. They were all in Ruhar script. She could barely read half of the words.
How the hell could she?
Just then, her phone must have realized she needed to read English, for all the commands blinked, and the words were then recognizable. She was in command of a Ruhar warship? No. She was in command of a battered hulk that was leaking air and had no source of power, with a crew of frightened cadets in deep interstellar space that was now a war zone. I accept command. She saluted Datha, using the two fingers to her cheek gesture of the Ruhar. Until you are able to return to duty. Sergeant Chaika, take two cadets with you and get Urmat Datha to the medical station. First priority is to restore main, or at least auxiliary power. Her fuzzy recollection of the ship's systems was that auxiliary power was a sort of fuel cell that did not have enough output to run more than basic systems, and a fuel cell needed a fuel tank. With the hull so peppered with breaches that it looked like Swiss cheese, did she dare hope a fuel tank had survived unscathed? Cadet Garner, who is the senior engineering cadet?
Sath Callan, but I have not been able to contact her. She was...
Jin's lower lip quivered.
Her duty station was in the forward section of the ship.
Perkins knew she had asked the wrong question. Who is the senior engineering cadet right here, right now?
That is me,
Jin swallowed, her incisors sticking out over her lower lip.
Urmath Perkins, I am not qualified.
You are as qualified as anyone available. Sergeant Chaika, when you get forward, pass the word for engineering cadets to make their way aft. We need all the help here we can get.
Urmath, I barely know
Senior Cadet Garner. I know nothing about these systems. She waved a hand to encompass the shattered equipment around them. We are in interstellar space, without power, and with a Bosphorak battlecruiser probably hunting us. If we can't restore power, we are dead. Is that clear? You cadets came aboard the... She almost referred to the ship as Toaster, which now seemed inappropriate. The route to Stella to gain real-life experience. Think of this, Perkins forced a smile she didn't feel, as a problem added to a training simulation.
A problem in a training sim. Right.
Jin bit her lip as she thought. A sim. Yes, she could think of the disaster as a particularly challenging and outrageously, ridiculously, unfairly challenging test in a sim. That way she could push the very likely possibility of impending death to the back of her mind and concentrate on the problem.
Right.
She looked up at the other three cadets.
Prance, you are with me.
While two cadets got the now unconscious Datha out of his useless suit, Dave pulled Perkins aside.
Ma'am, maybe you should go with the Urmat.
No, Sergeant, I need to be here.
Priority one is restoring power, or this ship is nothing but a composite tube that will be getting cold soon. If Garner needs my command codes to reactivate a system,
she waved her phone, I need to be here. Right now, this is the heart of the ship. The rest of the hull is just dead weight without the reactors. A few minutes after Dave went out through the airlock with the injured Datha and a cadet, Perkins was playing with the new command features of her Z-phone when she found a way to track the life signs of everyone aboard. It was also a way to compare the life signs against the crew roster, giving her an unwelcome confirmation of how many Ruhar were dead, including all of the adult crew other than Datha. 24 Ruhar cadets were also among the dead, including the senior engineering cadet. After giving her a sense of the damage that made her feel sick, the list then made her heart soar. Irene and Derek's life signs were strong, and inert. The young hamster was doing well except for an elevated heart rate, which was expected under the circumstances. She clicked on the icon for Captain Strebich, and a comm channel opened.
Captain Strebich.
Colonel Perkins. Oh, it is good to hear from you, ma'am.
Irene's voice trembled with relief.
We are in the auxiliary control center. We're kind of trapped here.
The Ruhar can't get you out?
We're alone, ma'am. There's vacuum outside the hatch. I think we have a slow leak in here somewhere. My ears have been popping, and it's getting harder to breathe. We have flight suits and helmets, so we can go on internal oxygen when we have to.
You and Bonsu are alone?
Then,
she thought back.
The nose of the toaster had been blown away several minutes before the ship jumped away from the battle space.
Who jumped the ship?
Well, that was us, ma'am. We did the best we could. I don't think we had a choice at the time. We were tracking two missiles running straight at us. Our shields were knocked back, and the proximity sensors could barely see anything.
When did the two of you get trained on jump procedures?
We kinda didn't. Perkins heard Derek join the conversation, and Irene put her phone on speaker. We had to wing it based on training briefs we studied. Ma'am, it was either risk the jump drive blowing up in our faces, or let those missiles kill us for certain. I figured if the drive coils blew, that would at least confuse enemy sensors for a while, maybe help the star carrier get away.
That was a ballsy call, you two.
A good call.
Colonel?
The rest of the team?
Irene asked anxiously.
They're all fine. And Nert, he's fine too.
The Ruhar crew? They're not so good.
Well, the entire crew is dead except for one badly wounded engineering officer.
All of the crew?
Derek's tone was shocked.
Oh, shit. The cadets are in charge now?
No, Bonsu. I am.
Sorry, ma'am. What did you say?
The injured officer transferred command authority to me.
They can do that?
We're aliens to them, Derek mused aloud.
Apparently they can, Perkins said without humor. Right now I've got cadets trying to get the reactor restarted. That tells you our situation. We're dead in the water, and that Bosphorok battlecruiser might jump our asses before we know it.
Ma'am, I don't think that's very likely, Irene stated hopefully.
We made a bad jump, really dirty, because we caught the edge of the damping field, so the resonance of our jump field must have been really chaotic, and the battle space was full of high-energy particles and spatial distortion. I don't think that enemy ship could track our jump endpoint. Not easily.
Christ, Strebich. That's the first good news I've heard all day. We may be safe because we screwed up the jump?
Colonel, right now, even we have no idea where we jumped to, Derek admitted. Until we get the nav system back online, we're blind. Although,
the wheels in his head began spinning with an idea.
We could launch a dropship, if any of them are still spaceworthy. Their nav gear will fix our position for us.
A dropship's sensors can establish our position with enough accuracy for us to program a jump?
Perkins asked hopefully, before realizing she had gotten ahead of herself.
Oh, forget it. We can't jump anyway without the reactors.
That's not true, ma'am, Irene reported, cringing as she looked at Derek, who was worried she had gotten their CO's hopes up for nothing.
The reactors provide juice to jump drive capacitors, but our capacitor banks still have a 72% charge. We're good for another jump, except we don't know where we are, and the drive control system is offline.
And we have no idea how to program a jump, Derek added helpfully.
Sorry, ma'am.
That's all right, Bonsu. I sure as hell don't need people trying to put a good spin on things for me.
The two of you will be all right in there for a while?
Affirmative, Irene replied, with her voice sounding distinctly unhappy.
We are sure you have other priorities.
You got that right. I'll see if a cadet crew can get you out of there, but we need pilots anyway, and that AUX station is the only place the ship can be flown from?
It is, Irene agreed.
Then sit tight.
Strebich? Bonsu? I can't tell you how good it is to hear you're both still with us.
Perkins had no sooner ended the call when Dave pinged her.
Colonel, we have a problem. I think Datha is dead. He's not responding at all now, and the pulse indicator on his wrist pad is reading zero. It could be a glitch, but I shined a light in his faceplate, and it looks like he's not breathing.
Shit. She clicked the icon for Datha on her phone, and it showed his life signs had ceased.
Where are you?
Still outside the ship, about halfway. We had to take a different route. Looks like a power relay under the hull blew after you and I went past. It's arcing real bad.
Perkins paused to think, though Cadet Garner was waving for her attention.
Chaika, keep going. Datha may still be alive and we've got to try to save him. Ruhar can go longer without oxygen than we can, and we need you to round up engineering cadets to send back here. Oh, also,
she tried to snap her fingers, but the suit gloves muffled the sound.
See if you can find a route back here that stays inside the ship. There must be some passageways that aren't blocked.
Obstructions aren't the only problem, ma'am.
A lot of the interior is exposed to vacuum, or there's power relays blowing.
Yeah.
We'll need to get a crew working on disconnecting relays and plugging holes. I'll have Jared and Coulter organize something. Damn it. What else did she need to think about before a disaster overwhelmed them? She turned her focus back to the immediate engineering problem. Garner, what is it?
Urmat Datha indeed had died while being transported to the medical station, which anyway had no qualified doctor to assist the many wounded, and the medical bot was operating on reduced capacity. Irene and Derek had been strapped into pilot couches, and the other Mavericks had dutifully secured themselves into their beds when the maneuvering alarm sounded. The cadets did not have the luxury of strapping in and waiting. Most of them had designated action stations, so many had been moving through the ship when it got hit. A dozen young people had been killed or severely injured when the ship lost its nose, because they hadn't yet reached their action stations. Others were lost when masers or railguns or missiles tore open their section of the ship. Emily Perkins considered it ironic that the uselessness of humans aboard an alien ship is what had saved their lives. She also considered that a training ship full of teenage cadets had no business being dragged into action with a real battle group. If it had been her decision, she would have jumped the Star Carrier to a safe location and dropped off the route to Stella before taking the battle group into harm's way. As it had not been her decision, she needed to focus on what she could affect right then. Jin Garner was overwhelmed with the task of first stabilizing backup power, then trying to determine if it was safe to restart the reactor. She begged Perkins for more cadets who specialized in the engineering field, particularly power generation systems. It was time for Perkins to speak to the cadets, to speak to the crew, she reminded herself, for cadets were the only crew the ship had. How to do that? She fumbled with her phone, not wanting to distract Jin from her work, and not wanting to show how unfamiliar she was with basic ship systems. Okay, there it is. She found after 4 minutes of almost random clicking around the screens. The entire communications system was not offline due to lack of power. It had been simply disabled and needed to be rebooted. Her command codes allowed Perkins to call individual people, but otherwise comms were squelched. That was, she vaguely recalled, standard procedure in combat when a ship's stealth field was inactive. Internal comms posed a risk of electromagnetic radiation leaking beyond the ship and betraying it to enemy sensors. That procedure was great in most conditions, but while outside the ship, Perkins had seen so many power conduits arcing that the ship was lit up like a Christmas tree. She found the codes to re-enable the ship-wide comm system, took a breath, and spoke to the crew. Her crew. Attention, all hands. This is Lieutenant Colonel Perkins,